All right, so back for the break. Emma was going to, her character was based, was going to be based on social interaction aspect.
Yes.
So we already discussed a little bit about the way the Kensei, their painting and calligraphy, maybe a little, has some social interaction, the fact that they're kind of history noblemen, so you kind of play them in more of a leadership kind of role. But were there other aspects? There'll be other aspects of your character, I'm sure, that you would play up to make it more of a social interaction kind of character. So, who is the character?
My character's name is Kimberly.
Okay.
Obviously female. So that's all I make nowadays.
Wow.
So but she is Arakraka monk. So, bird person.
Alright. Way of the Kensei, obviously.
Yes, Way of the Kensei. She is lawful neutral. She has black eyes. She's medium sized. She's 4'10". She's smaller on the medium scale.
Okay, short. A short bird person.
Short bird. Short bird.
Did you stick with the standard Arakraka, or are you doing a kind of bird?
A different type of bird, I think.
What bird?
It's a dove. So I thought doves are nice.
There you go.
I like the look of doves.
There you go.
Doves and swans are my favorite.
You have done eagle.
No.
Alright, so doves style Arakraka. Alright.
Yes, because it says I have to have hair so I have feathers.
There you go.
Have another hair with feathers.
Obviously.
So she has tan feathers. She's 10 in human years. But Arakrakas, with their lore and stuff, they grow mature at 3, so she's old.
Oh, okay.
And they live to be about like 30.
There you go.
Or something like that. And she's 102 pounds. She is noble. Playing with that noble person.
Oh, it's her background.
Yeah, her background is noble. And she has a bunch of personality traits. She doesn't pay attention to the rest. I'm mentioning these, I don't think how I mentioned these. I'm mentioning these because these are important to roleplay.
Yeah.
She doesn't pay attention to the rest of the situation, never tell her the odds. Despite her noble birth, she does not place herself above other folk. She thinks they all have the same blood, which is good.
There you go.
She has respect for her ideals. Respect is duty because of her position, but all people regardless of station within purity and dignity, so that's good. Bonds, the common folk assume is the hero of the people. She's literally hero of the people. And flaws, I find civilian in life difficult and struggles when you're in these social situations. She mostly wears fancy noble outfits like dresses.
Alright. Well, did you like take that. Any particular, skills or feats to emphasize?
Yes.
Your social interactions? And what level did you make?
She's a light.
Level 8. She would have 2 feats then, or abilities for 3 feats.
I'm pretty sure she got abilities for 3 feats with feats.
You didn't find any feats that you
no, thought not would work? Really.
Okay.
So she got 2 abilities for improvements. Kind of looking at the rear. There's a lot of combat stuff that she has, so she's good for combat. And I think exploration too. Like,
well, you can fly, so.
Yeah, she can fly.
That's a big asset right there. So what's the background? What's the general idea behind this character? And is it supposed to be more of a NPC you plan on using in a campaign you're running, or a character that you would have actually liked to run?
A character like I would like to play. Like, this is a cool character. Her backstory is, I don't know that looks, that sounds cheesy. Don't quote me.
We are quoting you, but that's kind of the whole point of the video.
Shush. Yeah, we do you all the time. Like when you said push.
So.
As a young girl, Kimberly was trained to be a strong leader and expert in war affairs. She had the best tutors from around her kingdom and grew to be a kind and beautiful leader. But when the riots broke out in her kingdom, the many foreign family stopped ruling, she saw how crooked her father was, so Kimberly helped people take her father down. And now Kimberly realms a princess in her kingdom and who's determined to destroy all corrupt kings across the land, which is also her motive.
Oh, there you go. Alright, that's kind of cool. So her dad was corrupt and she's now making sure that no one else has to deal with corrupt kings.
Yes.
That's cool. I like that. All right, anything else of note that you wanted to point out?
Well, she has the calligrapher's supplies, so she does calligraphy.
The calligraphy that you chose?
Yeah, I chose calligraphy because painting isn't kind of what I thought. She has jeweler's tools, actually, so she knows how to make jewelry.
All right.
And she has a dragoness chest. She knows languages. She knows Aircrocker, Oran, Common, and Elvish. Her weapon, she has a short sword, and a whip.
Okay, so those are your Kensei weapons?
Yeah, her Kensei weapons are that. She also has a sickle, so as soon as she turns level 11, that'll probably be her next one. The sickle is fun.
Well, she would have got one at the sixth level, so.
Sickle is quite a few there. I just did it. She also has a darkened sickle. That's what I'm missing.
Well, you can fix it.
Yeah,
so, alright. Alright, cool.
Yay!
So that was the way of the Kensei here. Kimberly, right?
Yep.
Kimberly. Eric Crockett. Before we forget, the Eric Crockett is from the Elemental Evils Companion.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a free PDF you can get online. Of course, if you have D&D Beyond, and I imagine any of the other online D&D creator services, they probably just for free on there. And then the way of the Kensei was from Xanathar's Guide to Everything.
I mean, what subclass do you use?
So, I went with the Way of the Cobalt Soul. This is a Unearthed Arcana from Critical Role, so it might change in the future. I think the subclass could easily be applied to many different worlds. So they might end up changing the name of it one day if they decide the same thing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, go Critical Role on this one. I really enjoy this one. So I'm going to give you my summed up version of it, removing the specific to the critical role parts. So, driven by the pursuit of knowledge and seeking the clarity of truth, they pledge to learn the arts of seeking enlightenment by understanding the world around them and mastering the techniques to defend it. They are the embodiment of the phrase, know your enemy. Through research, they prepare themselves against the ever-coming tides of evil. Through careful training, they have learned to puncture and manipulate the spiritual flow of an opponent's body. Through understanding the secrets of their foe, they can adapt and surmount them. Then, once the fight is done, they return to record their findings for future generations of monks to study them.
Ooh.
So, as Tyler likes to point out, I like to make this kind of character a lot. It's one of my favorite kinds of characters. So, yeah, so when I saw this, it was like, well, perfect for me. So, at level 3, the way the Cobalt Soul gets the extract aspects. When you use your flurry of blows on a foe, you mark them as analyzed. This allows you to use your reaction to use an unarmed strike at them if they miss you, and it allows you to know their vulnerabilities, resistances, and immunities. I think this could take you the extra mile on this one, because for certain enemies, knowing this info and confidently expressing their strengths and weaknesses during combat can really psych them up. I think, so like, it's a combat ability, obviously, but I think you can really ham it up in combat, like Naruto style or whatever, and like really mess with people.
And that's a lot of roleplay too.
Yeah. And so I think there's a definite strong social interaction element to this ability. If you want to use it, I wouldn't use it on every enemy, obviously, but on the big bads or something like that, or somebody you're trying to intimidate so you don't kill them, maybe that would be a way of going about it. Then at level 6, is extort truth. When you hit with an unarmed strike, you can spend one key point and force a charisma saving throw. If they fail, they can't speak deliberate lies, and all charisma checks directed at them are made with advantage for a whopping 10 minutes. You know if they passed or failed the check. And basically, it's like Zone of Truth, if you're familiar with that spell, and that they can avoid answering if they choose. Because, you know, since you know and they know that they're under this you know, can't lie thing, they can just, you know, shut their mouth without saying anything. But they can't speak any deliberate lies, which I think is really cool. And I think, you know, this could be really fun with the big bad too, because if they have a bunch of minions, you can start asking them questions that make them look really bad in front of their minions. Maybe you can get some of them to run away or turn on them or something like that.
You've got to bounce.
Yeah.
Howdy.
So I think you can have a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Then there's mystical erudition. Yeah. This is actually the thing that led me to, between this and Extort Truth, but really this one is what led me to choose this one for my exploration-based character. Because, you're good at learning stuff, basically. You learn one language and you gain proficiency, and you gain a proficiency. If you already have that proficiency, you gain expertise. And it's, you get to choose from these skills. Arcana, history, investigation, nature, and religion. You get this again at levels 11 and 17. So, like, you just get a lot of skills. And I think that really helps with the exploration. Because all these are good exploration things. Then at level 11 is Mind of Mercury. Once per turn, you can spend one key point to take another reaction. That's just good.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, so,
this is
if you focused on, like, if you were making a combat version of this, you'd focus on things like the Sentinel feat or whatever to give yourself more, attacks of opportunity and things like that. And you can really ham it up. A really good combat ability. And then level 17. Oh, remember you get a mystical erudition at level 11. At level 17, you also get another mystical erudition. But the other ability you get is Debilitating Barrage. When you hit with a flurry of blows, you can spend three key points and cause the creature to suffer from a vulnerability of your choice for 1 minute or until someone hits them with that damage type. Then they are immune to this ability for 24 hours. Now, I think this is a cool way of letting you support your teammates. Say if you have a big spell, if they have a big spell they plan on using, like a big fireball or an ice spell or something, you can just make them weak to that type. And you can,
this is a really, really strong set for us.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that doesn't seem strong at first, but like, when you really dig into it, to how, what you can do with it.
Yeah.
It's just really good. My character I made was Nafinia Glinren. She's a female furball monk, level 9.
We all have females, huh?
Yeah, and I mostly chose level 9 because in monk, at that level, your unarmored movement, you get the ability to run up walls and run across water, which I think is one of the most, like, niftiest exploration abilities. So I wanted her to have that. And I mostly made this, actually uses mostly an NPC, like, wow, I would certainly have fun playing this character. I made her to be more of an NPC to, like, for your characters to either study under her or to get her assistance into the Feywild. And I'll kind of go into why. So the idea behind this character is that in her Furball Village, they train one person in every generation to go out and explore the world. Because the Furballs don't really like to, you know, get involved in other people's stuff, and they like to stay safe. But they also need to know what's going on around the world as well. So, the idea is that in her village, they're trained, they go out into the world, they explore, and then they come back and bring the stories of what they experience to the village. So everybody gets that benefit of having like left, but they don't all have to put themselves in that risk. So I think it was a fun concept. I mean, do what you want with your world, but I just think that'd be a fun way to make your football interesting, you know? So, and the idea is that the reason why I think she'd make a good guide is because the concept is that she went out to the forest and was exploring and kind of ended up stumbling into the Feywild. And was there for 6 years. So, when it came to her mystical erudition and stuff like that, I chose that she did survival. And, twice. And that, so she got that expertise in survival and in nature and stuff like that, because she basically had to make deals with Archfey and things like that in order to survive, because the Feywild is a very dangerous place. So she learned a lot about the Fey and learned about the Feywild in general. And so if you need somebody to help guide the players into the Feywild or help them go around with it, she'd be good. Plus, she'd be good in combat, so it's not like she'll be a joke to have around with the characters.
I hate that use of CE. The fighter does 100 damage. The rogue does 150. The NPC does 2.
Yeah. We hit with a sword. So.
I didn't see that meme, but I'm pretty sure it's funny.
Was it a meme?
Oh, you just made it up.
Oh my god.
I did.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wait, that sounds like a meme. Wait, hold up, my brain.
That's a meme? Did I just make up a meme?
Mm-hmm, I think you did, sir.
Well, there you go. Alright, so, for feats, I had her take the Fey Touched, because she spent so much time in the Fey. And then, I had her take the skill expert feat, so that she would have survival,
expertise and survival,
basically. I doubled up on survival on that one because that was the one skill that she didn't quite have yet. So.
Yes, she learned it in the Feywild.
She learned in the Feywild. Yep. And I had her take nature as her mystical irradiation ability at level 6. She didn't get another one yet because she wasn't level 11 to do that yet. So, there you go. I had her take painter supplies. Because you get, I think it's part of the mount, you get to choose, a tool. And I had her take painter supply. So she does a lot of paintings of the Feywild and stuff like that. So that's how she helped accentuate her stories.
Does she have proficiency in painter
tools? Yeah, she's, okay. Yeah, she has proficiency in painter tools. So she has these wonderful illustrations that, you know, if your character has never been in the Feywild, they'll be like, these are the craziest things they've ever seen, you know, and it's like, that's not real, but if you've been in the Feywild,
how much is this girl's ring?
Yeah, pretty much. So that was the idea behind that character, was basically to be a guide or a teacher for future Firbolg or whatever. So,
oh, cute.
So, there you go. Now the Firbolg is in the Volo's Guide to Monsters, and,
if you're playing D&D without Volo's Guide, what are you doing?
Well, yeah, you really should just buy that. And then, the Way of the Cobalt Soul is a critical role. I know it's on D&D Beyond. I don't actually know where else it is. I'm sure you can find it on the interwebs
if
you
look. Just Google it!
Yeah, I'm sure you can Google it and find it. It's Unearthed Arcana, so it might change in the future. I hope it doesn't. I really like it. I think it's quite cool. So, that's that. Any, questions? No?
Well, you were all about exploration, right?
Yeah, a little bit of exploration.
Okay, I wanted to make sure. I don't think you told it that. So, like, exploration, combat, a little bit.
So, yeah. Say that again? Say to Fey Touched
and Skilled Expert.
Skilled Expert.
Because that's one of the new feats in Tasha's.
Yeah.
And I really like that
one. I wasn't expecting you to take mobile, personally.
I'm considering it.
Yeah. I mean, my character's mobile.
Yeah. All right. And so we're going to take all these characters, we're going to post them on our, Google Drive, I believe.
Yeah, you can just link up, we don't need to put them on Google Drive.
Put them on Google Drive, then you can find everything.
Oh, is this one a blue driver you're gonna link every video to, so they're all in one place?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That will
yeah. Work. So we have we're gonna have a Google Drive for the channel. I'll probably put everything in folders because I'm you know what I do.
Quite crazy.
But there'll be PDFs available of all these characters for you to access. You can you're free to use them in your campaigns for whatever you need.
So, campaign.
All right. We'll see you next time. We're gonna be discussing the warlock.
Discussing the warlock.
So we'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.
Confusion. Good luck fitting that in now, sucker.
Okay. Screw you, Jesse.
Yeah, you're a sucker, Jesse. You're a sucker duck.
Loser. Loser. I hate you, Jesse.
You're the worst.
You're the devil.
Welcome to Realms of Peril and Glory, an all-new actual play podcast.
There are guided tours once a week. Come on, Darbrennan.
How about you, you filthy timepiece?
RPG is home to hilarious stories.
The thing that kicks off a really good tale is...
when they take their tops off.
Sorry?
When you're reading, like... Don't worry, don't worry.
And thrilling adventures.
There's bad guys, there's an ogre. Probably best if you stay here. Sorry, I'll be back soon.
Why am I tied up?
That was your sibling, not me. Bye.
Each season is an all-new actual play story told collaboratively at the table, featuring guest players from the Magnus Archives.
I remember being in the water, and that was awful. And now I'm not in the water, and that's... much better.
Wooden overcoats.
I am a snowman. I have one job, and that is to stand in place. I was doing that very well.
Yes, and she might come back 9 times more powerful with lots of food and kippers.
We fix space junk.
On the surface, you might look different, but you're very, very similar inside. And I can vouch for that.
And more.
What I am about to tell you stays in this room. Got it?
I don't happen to know where there's, like, secret plans about meat and smoothies.
Ducks! Did you say ducks? Did you say ducks? Did you say duck?
You can find Realms of Peril and Glory wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're gonna have a good laugh, then we're gonna possibly cry, and then we'll grab dinner.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Three Pillars of D&D Cast. I'm Jesse.
Hi, Mama.
This is Tyler.
Hi.
Yeah, there you go. This time we're going to be going over the characters we made for the monk class. So last time, if you caught it, we went over all the aspects of the monk, and while a majority of them were combat-related, we did point out the different aspects that we thought were exploration and social interaction.
Monk!
Yeah. And Emma did that. Stop doing that.
What?
So, either way, here we go. So, first we're going to start with Tyler.
Okay, so, my character is a seer monk named Kava. She is a sage that that attempts to gain knowledge by astral projection of a moose who's to be up enemies and then try to if they have books, she'll take the books. If they have something that she needs to know, she'll get it out of them.
All right.
That's the whole point.
So, what kind of monk is she?
Astral self.
Okay, so what are the abilities of the way of the astral self?
Specific astral self abilities, you have arms of the astral self, where you can spend 1 key point... as a bonus action, you can spend 1 key point to summon the arms of the astral self. When you do so, each creature Your choice that you see within 10 feet, you must succeed. Dexterity saving throw or take 4 damage equal to 2 rolls from martial arts die. And then for 10 minutes, the spectral arms hover near your shoulder or surround your arms, your choice, and you determine the arm's appearance, and you vanish early if you're incapacitated or die. And while the arms are present, you gain the following benefits. You use your wisdom modifier, place a strength modifier, making strength checks and strength saving throws. You can use the spectral arms to make arm strikes. When you make an arm strike with the arms on your turn, your reach rate is 5 feet greater than normal. The arm strikes you make with the arms can use your wisdom modifier in place of strength or dexterity modifier for attack or damage rolls, and your damage takes force.
Okay, so you basically make big crazy arms, and you can make them whatever you want them to look like, basically.
Yeah.
And they're just extensions of your arms, and they're coming out of your shoulders, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, yeah, they have 5 extra reach, which is really good, actually.
So is it only extension of arm and shoulders, or it can be, like, anywhere? It can be, like, your head? Or
no, it should be somewhere relatively close to your arms, I believe.
Okay. I mean, it doesn't really affect where they are. Just flavor things up as you want them. Remember, yeah. That's the whole point of D&D. And then our second ability, Visage of the Astral Self, is at 6th level. You can summon the Visage of your Astral Self, and as a bonus action, or as part of the bonus action you take to activate the arms, you can summon 1 key point to summon the Visage for 10 minutes, and then advantages early if you're incapacitated or die. And it covers your face, basically a helmet or mask, and you can determine its appearance. And while the Visceral Visage is present, you gain the following benefits. You can see normally in darkness, both magical and non-magical, to a distance of 120 feet. You have advantage on wisdom, or you have advantage on insight and intimidation checks. And when you speak, you can direct your words to a creature of your choice that you can see within 60 feet of you, making it so only that creature can hear you. Alternatively, you can amplify your voice so that all creatures within 600 feet of you can hear you.
You put a helmet on?
Yeah, it's kind of like the spectral arms, except, you know, head.
Okay, so it's just a head area kind of spectral form.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, it's the astral cell. Is when you have both your astral arms and massage summons, you can cause your body, your astral self, to appear. And it's no action required. You just need the other two at the same time in order to use this one. And then stretch your body can use physical form with a suit of armor, connecting it with the arms and massage, determine its appearance. While the spectral body is present, you gain the following benefits. When you take acid, cold, fire, force, lightning, or thunder damage, you use your reaction to deflect it. When you do so, the damage you take is reduced by 1d10 plus your wisdom modifier. And then, empower arms. Once on each of your turns, when you hit a creature with arms, the astral self, and deal extra damage to target equal to your martial arts die.
Okay, so all these abilities so far, these are purely combat based. There's nothing that would work outside of combat for any reason.
Well,
I mean, the arms are supposed to have extra reach, right?
Yeah, the massage, you can, you know, seeing is good, but insight and charisma is good, and being able to speak loud is good.
Okay, so there are some other applications for these.
So. Yeah, so the helmet is very, you know, social interaction, while the arms are very combat, and the body is also very combat, too. And do you want me to cover my 17th level ability, even though it's not on the character.
Okay. Yeah, this isn't on the character, but yeah, it's gonna be there.
And once you get to level 17, which is character's not, but your connection to the astral self is complete, allowing you to unleash its full potential. As a bonus action, you can spend 5 key points to summon the arms, massage, and body your astral self, and wake up for 10 minutes. And it ends early for incapacitate or die. And when the full awakened astral self is awakened, you gain the following benefits. You get +2 armor class, and whenever you use the extra attack feature to attack twice, you can set attack 3 times with all the attacks made with your astral arms.
So, you can say 3 times instead of twice?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it just powers up all your previous astral form stuff?
Yeah. No, it's actually a pretty strong class, because just the arms by themselves, 5 extra things to hit, if the creature can't move, you're basically in the clear. Because 5 feet greater than normal. Because normally it's 5.
Yeah.
And then, now it's 10, so let's say you have a pole arm, and if they're incapacitated, they can't get to you. It's great. And it allows you to do more damage. You have wisdom modifiers, body of the astral self. Adds an extra martial arts die to it, to damage.
Well, okay, there you go.
So the abilities almost all the monk abilities are combat, but the ones that are really important, this character is...
What's this character's name again?
Kava.
Kava?
Yes.
Kava. Kava. Avocado?
No. I don't know if that was on camera.
Alright, so the character's name is Kava.
Yeah, Kava. Yeah, so the abilities that are important to Kava are, extra attack and stunning strike allows the character to, be strongest. Because you can spend a key point to attempt a stunning strike, and then, when you hit with a melee weapon attack, and the target must succeed a constitution saving throw or be stunned until the next turn. Or yeah. The actual arm with the extra range, they can't move while they're stunned.
Okay, so that's the big thing. Yeah, we talked about stunning strike last time, but yeah, so being able to stun people from 10 feet away is pretty powerful. Actually, combat ability. Now, you were saying before that, Kava prefers to take the visage of a moose?
Yes.
So, does Kava float in the body of the moose? Or above the moose? How does that work?
Kava sitting there meditating and there's the moose appears.
Yeah, I'm imagining, you don't have to pull up this image, but the totem armor for MCG cards. Almost see-through animal that's
I'll have them bring it up so we kind of have a as an example.
A Patronus from Harry Potter?
But not exactly. Patronuses are projected. I know what he's talking about because I've seen the card and we'll show you the picture later.
Okay, I have no idea.
The general idea, but I'll make sure, I throw it up on the screen because that's a Wizards of the Coast thing, so it's all related.
And if you're listening to this on a podcast, you should look that up.
I'll link the card in the description so you can look it up if you really want to see. Alright, so outside of combat, what does Kava do?
Outside combat, Kava loves to read and study.
Okay, so he's a monk.
Yeah.
Oh, no, really?
She?
Oh.
Kava's
a she. Okay, yeah, sorry.
So, yeah, she likes to, read and study. She doesn't meditate as often.
Okay, so is she, lighthearted, jokester, or more of the stoic monk, kind of monk?
She can make a joke and will if possible, but she usually doesn't even, she's usually by herself a lot of the time.
Oh, okay.
So she's usually having anyone make jokes too.
Oh no!
So sometimes it's kind of pathetic when she wants to make a joke.
No one there to hear it. So, did you make this character as more of a character you'd like to play one day, or more of an NPC, do you think?
I really like the character. I would totally play Gaga. It would be hard for me to usually don't typically play female characters, but...
There you go. And, so yeah. She tends to be, you think she tends to be more of a loner than anything?
Yes.
Okay. Even in a group of people, or just because she doesn't spend time with people?
Even in a group of people, she'd be more by herself.
More of the loner?
Yeah, she'd read books or everyone else was like, grabbing a beer.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
So does she drink?
Enough to relax, not enough to get so drunk that she can't read.
Yeah. Fair enough. So, Kava, right?
Yes.
So Kava is, Seder is from
Theros.
From the mythic odysseys of Theros.
Yep.
And the way of the astral self is Tasha's Cauldron of Everything, if you want to find that. Alrighty? Alright. So next we have Emma. She's going to discuss the Way of the Kensei.
Yes.
So what is the Way of the Kensei?
So, Way of the Kensei, monks that take this class, this subclass, train relentlessly, and they're mostly noble people and, like, samurai. Their, like, weapons have become to the point where it's an extension of their own body. And they have mastery over many different weapons, basically.
Okay. So the monks of the Way of the Kensei, they specialize in martial weapons, then, instead of simple weapons?
Yes, they specialize in martial weapons, which make them really unique, like every other monk class.
Oh, okay.
They also have, like, also see weapon in the same way as a calligrapher or a painter regards, like, a pen or a brush. You get, like, special martial arts training that leads you to master, like, a lot of weapons.
Okay.
You can also, get proficiency in, you know, calligraphy and painting, and, like, you get, so for, like, your first ability, you get kensei weapons, which means you choose two types of weapons to be your kensei weapons. One melee weapon and one ranged weapon. Each of these weapons can be simple or martial weapons that lack the heavy and special properties. You can also get a longbow. You gain proficiency with these weapons if you don't already have proficiency. And you also get agile parry, which means you make an unarmed strike in front of the attack action on your turn. On your turn, and you're holding a kensei weapon. You can use it to defend yourself if it is a melee weapon. You gain a +2 attack to AC until the start of the next turn, while the weapon is in your hand, and you are incapacitated. Kensei shot, which you also get, means you get a bonus action on your turn, and you make ranged attacks with a kensei weapon more deadly. When you do so, any turn you hit with a ranged attack using a kensei weapon takes an extra 1d4 damage of the weapon's type. You retain this benefit until the end of your current turn. And also, Way of the Brush, you gain proficiency with your choice of calligrapher or painter's class.
As you said earlier, yeah.
Yeah. On that 6th level, you get...
Okay, well, before we get to the 6th level, actually. So the kensei weapons, is a combat based in the agile pair.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I like that you can choose either the painter or the calligrapher style. So, that's just more of fleshes out more of your character's personality, because they're supposed to be more like samurai or nobleman or some kind of different kind of monk like that. Is there anything else you can think of, like, that really defines that class a little bit in that way?
Sokka.
Kinda? Sokka.
Yeah, actually, Sokka's a really good one to think of for this class. Especially because in the show, he canonly learns calligraphy and painting.
Yeah, he's got his map-making skills. Though I don't really know if that applies, but you know, he He studies. He's studious, but actually, I never thought about Sokka being a way of the Kensei, but actually, he kind of is.
He so totally is. Long sword.
Mind blown. All right. Star sword. There
and
you
also
go.
Also, a blue line, which is a ranged weapon.
Yeah, which you could take as your ranged weapon if you wanted to.
That'd be a really fun character.
Yeah. Speaking of boomerang, that actually comes up online. But, either way, so, sixth level then.
At sixth level, you extend your key to your Kensei weapons, and you get magic Kensei weapons, and, which means you attack with your Kensei weapons counting as magical for purposes of overcoming resistance, and immunity to non-magical attacks and damage.
Oh, that's cool, because remember the monk gets that ability. I can't remember what level they get. I think it is 6th level.
Yeah, they get magical fists.
They get magical fists, so that not only does it fist, it's their weapons as well.
Yeah.
Alright, cool.
And you also get...
You get another Kensei weapon?
No, you get Death Strike. Sorry, it's confusing. When you hit a target with a Kensei weapon, you can spend one key point to cause the weapon to deal extra damage to the target equal to your martial arts die. Nice. You can also use this feature only once on each of your turns. And, yeah, you do get another.
Yeah, every single...
Every time, yeah.
Yeah. You have to get another one. At 11th level, you gain the ability to augment your weapons for the with your key. As a bonus action, you can spend up to 3 key points to grant one Kensei weapon you touch a bonus to attack and damage when you attack with it. The bonus equals to the number of key points you spend, but this bonus lasts for 1 minute or until you use this feature again. It has no effect on a match, but Aria's bonus
attack. Oh, is that the bonus, the attack or the damage?
Damage.
Oh, okay.
To attack. Touch attack to damage. Yeah.
It's just damage, not the attack roll?
Yeah.
Okay.
So when you reach a level for the level's class, you can choose another type of weapon, either melee or ranged. Yay.
Yeah.
At 17th level, last one. Your mastery of weapons grants you extraordinary accuracy. If you miss an attack while using a monk weapon on your turn, you can re-roll. You can use this feature only once on each of your turns, and you get your last Kensei weapon.
No.
Also,
well, there you go. Alright. Well, that seems like a good place to take a break, so we'll take a break.
Bye. Bye.